Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from North Rim Bank, supporting news, educational, and cultural programming across the state on Alaska Public Media.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Outdoor Explorer. Here on Alaska Public Media, I'm Adam Verrier, I'm your host today, and I've spent the day out at the biathlon range at Kincaid Park, where I was volunteer at the trials for the World Junior Championships, the World University Games, the IBU Cup, which we probably will talk about a little bit later. I think the European Championships. Kids came from all around the country to try and qualify for these races here in Anchorage this week, and we're in the middle of a week of races, and I spent the week, the last 2 days out there volunteering at these races. And it was my first time in a long, long time watching a biathlon race, and I had all kinds of questions. And so I was fortunate enough to get Sarah Studebaker Hall and Zach Hall together with me to answer the myriad of questions that I have about this sport, because although I've been close to the sport for a long time, I really don't know that much about it. So Sarah and Zach, thank you for joining me here today.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Excited to be here, thanks.
A quick introduction of my guests here today, Sarah Studebaker Hall, a two-time Olympian, a skier at Dartmouth College, and a two-time Olympian in biathlon. Which years were those that you went to the Olympics?
Yeah, I competed in 2010 and 2014 for Team USA on the biathlon team in Vancouver and Sochi.
Okay, and you also, more recently, were the assistant ski coach at the University of Alaska.
Yeah. So I spent 3 years up here coaching with the Seawolves, and now we're down in Utah.
Now you're down in Utah. You've lived in Utah for about 4 years, 5 years?
Six.
6 years, yeah. Okay.
Time flies when you're having fun, I guess.
And Zach, you grew up in Nikiski.
I did. Right?
And you were you also went to Dartmouth.
Yeah. Sarah and I met at Dartmouth as cross-country ski racers, and then I got into biathlon same time Sarah did, coming out of college, and spent a few years with the national team pursuing biathlon as well.
I didn't know this. See, I'm already learning new things. I thought you guys were both in biathlon as kids.
No.
No, I will take credit for Zach. I got him into biathlon, and it's my fault.
Did you get into biathlon when you were in college?
No, I got into biathlon when I was younger. So when I was in high school, I had a ski coach who had done biathlon, and I saw biathlon on the 98 Olympics, like some short little clip, you know, just enough to think, oh, that's an interestingly weird sport. Ended up asking him tons of questions about biathlon and figuring out what the sport was and realizing I think I might want to do that. And he helped find a camp for my friend and I to go to in Lake Placid, New York at the training center. And I guess that from there is kind of the rest is history, right? I ended up focusing on skiing in college and came back to biathlon when I graduated. The U.S. biathlon team was starting a development program at that time. And so there was opportunity for recent college graduates to come over and live in Lake Placid at the training center and, you know, have free room and board and healthcare, which seems pretty great when you're just graduating from college.
Ulterior motive. Right.
Yeah. So Zach and I took advantage of that. And Zach spent 3 years on the national team, and I spent 7 years on the national team.
Growing up in Nikiski, I somehow thought that maybe you had always been involved in biathlon. There are biathletes that come out of the... Actually, you know, before we even get into that, you described biathlon as, I think you just described it as either a weird sport or a strangely weird sport or something like that.
Weirdly interesting.
Weirdly interesting, maybe that's what it was. We should probably explain what biathlon is, because maybe not all listeners even know what we're talking about. Biathlon is a combination of what?
It's cross-country skiing and rifle marksmanship. So, you know, you're out ski racing, you've got a rifle, a 22 rifle on your back, and you're stopping either two or four times, depending on the race, to shoot at targets on a range. The most basic answer.
Okay, yeah, maybe we'll get more into the intricacies of it as we go on, but I want to get back to my question. You grew up in Nikiski, and maybe the only reason I was thinking that all these biathletes are coming out of there is because the Häkkinens are from Kasilof, right down near there. But yeah, you were not in biathlon as a junior skier.
No, not okay. not as we know it. But I got involved with hunting, and so you know, there, you know, that's how biathlon actually got its start thousands of years ago. It was a way of procuring meat, and so I guess in some odd sense of the way, yeah, I was doing biathlon a little bit. I actually moved up to Nikiski when I was 11 from Las Vegas, so I saw snow for the first time, pretty much. Had a rifle, got a dog, and so I did a lot of skiing around in the woods with a rifle, and that was, I guess, my first intro to this sport of biathlon.
Okay.
I pursued cross-country ski racing all the way through college, and then met a girl named Sarah in college, and then when the opportunity was there to pursue biathlon coming out of college, I really wanted to keep being a ski racer, and that seemed to be the best option because we could live in an Olympic training center and there was healthcare and all that stuff. So
right, there is a biathlon range down at Sky. Isn't there a biathlon range down there at
there,
Skyview?
There is. I don't know in what form it is at this point, but there were quite a few targets there. The Arctic Winter Games were hosted there at some point around, I think, 2006. Yeah. And so a range was installed at Skyview High School, and then they ended up taking it out. But there, over the years, there have been athletes who've tried to get something going there.
I think it's reoperational now at this point. We do, so U.S. Biathlon does have a club down there that in Kenai, mm-hmm. and a couple of athletes coming out of there. And I know they've got a lot of interest down on the peninsula for biathlon.
Club in Homer as well now.
So there's a club in Homer. Yeah. Obviously, Anchorage, we're having these big races here in Anchorage, big national races. Fairbanks has a biathlon range. I don't know if there's anything in the... There's probably nothing in the valley at the...
They're trying to get one going at Government Peak.
They are? Yeah. Okay.
And then there's a small range in Nome, and...
In Nome.
There's several other locations around the state where some form of biathlon is happening.
Right. What do you need? Yeah. What do you need to do the sport of biathlon? I mean, you obviously need ski trails, you need a range, but what is the range... what does the rifle range look like? I mean, can you describe what that is?
So it really depends. You know, when we think of World Cup or Olympic biathlon, you're thinking about a 30-point range, a big stadium, lots of trails. You know, it's a huge undertaking. You know, we live close to Soldier Hollow now, which hosted the 2002 games. That's a world-class range. You know, it's an International Biathlon Union A license venue, and that's not what they all look like. You know, you can do biathlon at much smaller areas. We're really lucky here in Anchorage to have a pretty awesome range. They have a 30-point range. They have roller ski trails connected to the range. The range is paved. And then obviously Kincaid Park just has kilometers and kilometers and kilometers of trails. So it's awesome. It's a great venue. But there's a lot of ranges that, you know, U.S. Biathlon has clubs around the country that they might have a range that has 5 points. It might be in someone's backyard. You know, we have ranges on military bases, ranges on private land, ranges on public land, ranges in the Forest Service areas. So, you know, you can do biathlon with very little. You know, we have a club in Boise, Idaho, which is where I grew up, that they go and they shoot at the local gun club and they just set a target out 50 meters and they do practice. They, you know, they don't have ski trails right there, but they're doing biathlon and they're running and shooting and, you know, then they're ski practicing somewhere else. And that's another way to do it. You know, it's like, would we love to have all of our biathlon clubs have 30-point ranges? Yes, absolutely. That would be great. But that's not possible. And, you know, it's not even necessary. If you got a few athletes who want to do biathlon and you've got the ability to set up a target 50 meters away in a safe place, then you can do biathlon.
This morning we were out at Kincaid, as I mentioned at the top of the show. And as you said, that's a 30-point range. Other than the spectator type of infrastructure that would need to go into something like having the Olympics, could you have an Olympic event there if it wasn't for all the other considerations like spectators and parking and that sort of thing, which obviously...
Yeah, I mean, just from like a competition side, you definitely could hold an Olympic-sized event there. There's enough trails. The stadium is big enough. The range is obviously meets the specs, and you know, it would be an undertaking.
Right.
But yeah, you definitely could. And the cool thing I think for Anchorage is there's not that many ranges around the country that meet that specification, that, you know, have those all 30 points, all electronic targets, and, you know, enough stadium space to really host a big event like this. It's, you know, and especially this year with so much snow, like, it is easy for them to host this event. It's they've got such a great venue. They've got really great facilities. And, you know, with the conditions the way they are, it's really not been a problem. Really been having great competitions.
Mm-hmm. What's the, what are the specifications on a range? How far away are the targets that you're shooting at?
Yeah, so the targets are 50 meters away. Your, like I said, you know, normal big IBU ranges are 30 points, but you can have fewer than that, and that's fine.
And IBU means International
Biathlon. Yeah, International Biathlon Union.
I learned that today.
Yeah. All of our many acronyms.
And your points are 2.75 meters wide.
Okay.
So they're 9 to 10 feet wide. Mm-hmm.
So that's shooting. You're shooting quite a bit closer to other shooters than you would at a typical public or private shooting range.
You're pretty close. You're packed in there. So you know the thing with biathlon that's interesting is when athletes ski into the range, they don't take their skis off to get down and shoot. In fact, the whole process from the time they step on to the shooting mat to the time they leave is typically less than 30 seconds. For the top of the world, it's now going sub 20 seconds. So the athletes come in, they touch the range, they're getting into position, whether it's laying down or prone, and then the other would be standing. But they get into position, rifles off, ready, they take their five shots, and then they leave in 20 seconds. And so in your bigger races, you can have athletes one right on top of the next going down the range.
Yeah. And you saw today, you know, the difference. Today we had a pursuit format race where people were starting really close together. The difference of the traffic on the range today versus an individual start race is, you know, it's really exciting to have all of those athletes coming in together, and some are hitting, some are missing, and the race is changing kind of right before your eyes, which is really cool.
Yeah, it was very busy out there. And we also, because of the format, you had some skiers coming in and shooting standing while others were shooting prone. Mm-hmm. In today's race, it was a 10-kilometer race. Skiers came through the range four different times, mm-hmm. and the first two times they were shooting in prone position, so lying down, and the second two shooting stations they were or shooting bouts. Right. There's a word I
nailed it.
Yeah, they were shooting in the standing position, and those techniques seemed quite. There were a lot of differences in the whole the way the whole thing went down between standing and prone. Can you walk us through how, like, so you start a typical biathlon race. You go off the start, you're skiing, which obviously is going to make you start breathing hard. Your heart rate is going to go up. You ski in today's race, they ski 2 kilometers. So they're out there for about 6 or 8 minutes. They come into the stadium, they're breathing hard, they're sweating, their heart rate's going. And they, if they were at the World Cup level, they would get in and out of there in 20 seconds, fire off five shots,
yeah.
The first, they came through on the prone position. So they come through on their skis, and then...
And then it's time to get to business as a shooter. So when you come into the range, when we're coaching athletes, typically somewhere about 50 to 100 meters out from the range, they start to shift their mentality a little bit from ski racing to shooting. Clearly, we're doing it together. But as they come into the range, they're breathing heavily. So you're trying to get as much kind of CO2 out of your system as you can. And you're starting to look at the wind flags. The wind indicators are really important in our sport because that can impact how the bullet flies. So they'll take a look at that. And then once they get to the mat, then like for the first shooting today, then they're dropping down on their stomach, taking the rifle off. In biathlon, we use an arm cuff and then what's called a sling. So the sling comes off the forestock and it connects into the cuff. And then the rifle, in essence, hangs kind of from the body. And so you've got your two elbows and then your torso support that rifle. And one thing that's important to note is when you're shooting in prone, you're shooting an Oreo cookie-sized target at 50 meters. So just hold up an Oreo and that's what we're trying to hit. In standing, we're looking at about a grapefruit size. So there's a little bit of a distinction there. It's slightly more stable when you're laying down. And so that's why the difference in the size there. But the athletes come in, lay down, take load a magazine. Magazines only hold 5 bullets. We're shooting a 22 long rifle, so you lay down
at 5 targets.
At 5 targets,
it's always 5 targets. You always have 5 bullets. A couple exceptions. We'll talk about those.
Yeah.
And before I forget to ask, do we currently shoot steel or lead?
We shoot lead now. Yeah.
Okay.
And there's a lot of conversation at the international level, the International Federation, to talk about the environmental impacts of lead and what might happen if lead, especially, is banned in Europe.
Oh,
that's,
okay.
you know, biathlon is the number one televised winter sport in Europe. It's super popular over there. So a lot of the regulations, especially environmental regulations, are driving change in our sport. So that's one of the, probably the next thing to change will be lead.
The specification on the bullet then is it's a 40 grain lead.
Okay.
And it has to be at standard velocity because of the subsonic. So the targets that we're shooting, you could damage them with the higher velocity stuff.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't want to get you off track. You were talking about you've got five bullets in a magazine.
And yeah, so you take five shots. There are five targets, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then this is where biathlon gets especially interesting. So in a normal cross-country ski race, a lot of fun to watch, but quite often you can say, hey, you know, those three athletes there, I'm going to put my money on them because we know that they're really good. That is certainly the case in biathlon. You have top-level athletes, but when athletes start to miss shots is when the race gets really interesting. So a missed shot then, after you take your five shots, let's say I've shot five, if I missed two, then on the way out of the range, there's a penalty loop. The penalty loop is 150 meters around, and you have to complete one loop for each missed shot before you get to go back and do your next big ski loop. And that today was taking 29 seconds. So you're looking at roughly a 30-second penalty, and you have to ski that penalty in the format we were running today. And so coming out, let's say you and I were skiing even on our loops, I'm now 60 seconds down to you roughly after missing two.
Although it's more likely that I would be at least probably about
two and a half minutes
down to you, so. Because you'd probably hit them all and I'd probably miss them all.
There you go. You know, one thing, talking about, you know, shifting from being a skier to a shooter, when the athletes come in, they're running about 90% of their maximum heart rate.
Oh, really?
So we've got a very high heart rate, and then the athletes over many years of training, they're learning how to basically, in essence, take a shot between each heartbeat. You know, so there's a lot of breathing going on and a lot of control.
So, and they're slowing down a little bit as they come in. You know, their heart rate's going to drop a little bit, but it's a major misconception of our sport that people think that our athletes are coming in and they're trying to drop their heart rate way down, because you really don't want to do that. You're only going to be in there 20, 30 seconds. Then you got to go right back out on the course. You want to keep your heart rate pretty high. You know, the clock's still ticking. You got to be ready to get back on your skis and get going. So the athletes are really learning how to shoot with pretty high heart rates rather than learning how to drop their heart rate quickly.
Yeah, I would have thought that the idea would be to get, that you would do a calculation, you'd try to do a risk assessment, and I will shoot better if my heart rate goes down, but how much time do I want to lose? And it sounds like that's not the case. Mm-hmm. What you really want to do is get good at shooting with a high heart rate.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and there's another thing that happens, and the best way that I can describe it is I grew up with a couple old vehicles in the family. And for anybody who's been in one, you know, when you're driving on the highway and you get up to highway speed, there's typically a point where the vehicle will kind of do a little shimmy. Yeah. And then you go over that and it smooths out again. Well, our heart rate is like that as it comes down from being really high. You get into the zone where you'll feel your heart rate pound really hard. And you really don't want to have that happen in the middle of a shooting bout, because your rifle barrel will start to bounce all over the place.
Right.
So we try to train the athletes to shoot with a high heart rate.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, my name's Adam Verrier. I'm your host here on Outdoor Explorer, which is the show you're listening to. And I'm here with Stara Studebaker-Hall and Zach Hall. They're both coaches. And Zach Hall is the head coach at in Soldier Hollow in Utah. And Sara Studebaker is the program director, if I have it correct.
I'm actually the director of operations for U.S. Biathlon.
For U.S. Biathlon, mm-hmm. nationally. And we're talking about biathlon. And the reason we're all here together today is because both Zach and Sara are here for the World Junior Championship tryouts, the World University Games tryouts, and tryouts for a whole bunch of other races that kids can qualify for. The thing that you were starting to say just now when I interrupted you to tell people who they were listening to was this idea that you come in off this sport where you're working really hard and you have a high heart rate and you're breathing hard, and then you have to do this activity, which is really the opposite of that. And you said that lend some excitement to the sport. And I will admit that, you know, I was a cross-country ski racer when I was serious about skiing, and I'd never have been a biathlete. And if I would be on an airplane going over to Europe, or I was between races or whatever I was doing, and people were asking why I was traveling or whatever, and I said, I'm a cross-country ski racer, and more than half the time people would say, oh, cool, so you shoot the guns? And I say, no, 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 I don't shoot a gun. I just do the cross-country skiing. And then people would always say, oh, well, it's cool if you could shoot the guns, huh? And I say, well, yeah, but I'm just cross-country skier. I'm sorry, it's such a disappointment to you, but that's just the way it is. And so you had said that it adds a lot of excitement. And that's what I thought out there today when I haven't been to a lot of biathlon races, although when I was younger, I did do a couple of little amateur races when I was 12, 14 years old. That clearly is an attraction about this sport to audiences. One thing that I've been told and I've seen on the TV when I was doing a little research, you get much bigger crowds for biathlon than you get for cross-country skiing in Europe. It's a huge sport. You get thousands of people both on TV and in the stadiums watching biathlon races. But we have a lot more cross-country skiers in this town, in Anchorage, than we have biathletes. Uh-huh. What's up with that?
You know, it's interesting because I think for whatever reason, biathlon has not been as popular in the U.S. just, you know, from the beginning. We've always had a much smaller group of athletes doing biathlon than we have doing cross-country skiing. And I think, you know, one thing is definitely the accessibility. I mean, cross-country skiing is obviously an expensive sport anyway. You've got these skis and all the gear and whatnot, and you have to be in a certain area that's going to get snow and have ski trails. And then on top of that, to get involved in biathlon, you have these rifles that are pretty expensive. You know, a lot of the clubs now have rifles where the athletes can borrow when they're first getting into the sport, but that's not always the case. And that's a pretty huge investment. And, you know, so the barriers to entry are definitely a little bit bigger, I think, for biathlon. Just adding the rifle marksmanship and then needing a range, needing a place to be able to do biathlon. So that's one of the things that we're working on at US Biathlon now, is trying to make sure that we have the resources and the knowledge to give to our clubs to help them create programs that are accessible, and then also to increase the number of clubs that we have around the country so that there's more kids that can get involved in biathlon. Because our belief is that having more access to biathlon, having more kids involved in biathlon it's really good for everyone. It's really good for the kids. It's really good for biathlon, obviously. And it's also really good for cross-country skiing, because you might find these kids who they are kind of like cross-country skiing. They're into it, but it's not really doing it for them, and they're going to probably quit when they're 16. But you add biathlon in, then maybe they're going to stick around. And then you have more kids in your club. And, you know, if your club can support both biathlon and cross-country skiing, that's really good for everyone. And so, you know, we're not, I think sometimes you encounter coaches and programs that feel like, oh, biathlon's just going to take away from what my kid is doing. They have all these opportunities in cross-country skiing. And we would say, you know, no, we just want to provide more opportunities. The more kids that get to go on international trips and experience that level of competition, the more kids that are just involved in sport and are out there skiing, you know that having a big group of kids out skiing together makes everyone better and is more fun for everyone. And that's what we're trying to do. And so if you can find that hook for just those kids, especially who, you know, maybe it's just not their thing, cross-country skiing, but they'll stay around if they get a shooter gun, then
right.
That's great. So
do you ever have the opposite? I mean, in Alaska, you wouldn't, because we tend to be a state of outdoors people and hunters. But are there any environments in which you have, for example, parents who say, I don't think I want my kids around guns? Do you get any of that?
I'm sure that we do.
Yeah. You just never see them.
We don't hear about them as often. But yeah, I mean, we definitely know that firearms, there's optics challenges around that, right? You know, and we acknowledge that a .22 rifle is a weapon. You know, if used improperly, it can do damage. Our goal with all of our clubs and with competition is always safety. That's the very, very first thing. And, you know, biathlon is a very, very safe sport. All of the rules around biathlon are created so that we can stay safe, so that the athletes stay safe, that the spectators stay safe, that coaches and officials and volunteers, that everyone is safe during an event or during a practice. So we've had very, very few incidences involving firearms. You know, more athletes get injured skiing than they do with the firearms.
Yeah, I've never heard of anybody getting hit by a .22 bullet in biathlon.
Right. No. You know, and so, but I think that it is, you know, it's definitely a piece of conversation for us is, you know, what about gun control? What about those sorts of things? And I think for us, when we teach kids about biathlon, the first thing they do is take a safety class. And so we are teaching gun control. We're teaching safety. And that's, you know, I think when Zach and I lived up here and we were going out into some of the rural villages where there's a gun around, you know, behind the door of every house, because you live out in the rural Alaska, you know, encountering firearms, knowing what to do when you encounter a firearm so that you can be safe is really, really important. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that we do is we teach rifle safety. Mm. So,
yeah, I'll say in the years I've been coaching, I've had a few families who express concern. And certainly that's an important thing to, you know, every family thinks about, you know, we're dealing with firearms. But one of the key things that I like to point out is that, you know, a firearm is simply a tool. So are all the cars we drive and the tools we have in our sheds, et cetera. And one of the things that I love about biathlon is that I get an opportunity to teach firearm safety. And as Sarah referenced at gun control, you know, we're just teaching kids how to safely manage something that's part of our everyday lives. Whether you live in Alaska or Utah or most states in the union, we've got a lot of firearms. And so I think it's great that kids get a chance to have a healthy respect and understanding for how these things work. And ultimately, we go out and we shoot Oreo cookie-sized targets, and it's a heck of a lot of fun. And as Sarah referenced, it's one of the safest sports out there, so it's really great. And I'll say, you know, I love getting, especially because we start our kids skiing when they're really young. When they're 10, they can start to learn to shoot in my club. And one of the things that I love about it is we'll have these young kids come in who've never fired a gun before, and within a couple years, they understand how the gun works. They understand how to clean it, how to manage it, and it's become a piece of their identity, and it's really fulfilling to see that.
Yeah,
Because it's not really a narrative we see all the time around firearms, and so for me, I love being able to pump that sort of positive energy into sport. So yeah. It's cool.
Well, Sarah had mentioned earlier that just a couple of minutes ago that one of the barriers to entry into the sport is the expense of a rifle. And and actually, the other thing that we were, you know, when we were out there at the race today, I was hoping to get a hold of you guys in the range and maybe we shoot a few bullets or something. But one of the things that was pretty striking about the environment around the range is the safety, all the safety aspects that, you know, nobody, you can't just go out there and start shooting guns at the biathlon range.
Yeah.
And things are very, very tightly controlled. And that's one of the reasons I think that we're here now a couple hours later at your house rather than out at the biathlon range, among a couple other reasons. But it was clear to me in seeing how the whole day went down, the place was full of people. But everything was very much under control. There was a safety check for every athlete's rifle at the start of the event. The guy who controlled the range had a tight control on things, and it's a pretty serious penalty for any sort of safety violation.
Yep.
Even the most minor of safety violations.
Yeah, anything that can be really construed as a safety violation in biathlon is a disqualification, an automatic disqualification. Yeah. And, you know, that's like, just because we cannot afford to have an issue, you know, and not only from like a media standpoint, right, but also from an athlete standpoint, the last thing that you want to do is have an athlete be injured. So from the very, very beginning, they're learning these rules so that they can stay safe and also so that they don't get disqualified, right? You know, I mean, no one wants that, but also more than that, they'd like to keep all their fingers and toes.
Yeah, I like to say the rules compel you to do the right thing. So each time you come into the range, you have a magazine that's loaded with five bullets. And when you get to the mat, you are required to take five shots. And if you don't, there are serious penalties that come from that. And the scorers are always counting the shots. So they'll know if an athlete, for example, only takes four and leaves with a loaded rifle. That almost never happens, but if it were to, you know, there's going to be a flag right away on that. So the rules really compel you to do the right thing and help you along the way. And then in our, you know, what you're seeing is a lot of the higher level athletes here. So we're talking 14 to 18 years, kind of primary age range for this championship. But when you start the athletes at a younger age, so say around 10, they never carry the rifle. So the rifle... They meet the rifle on a mat, and there's a coach there at the mat, and so they start to learn how to manage the rifle with it pointed directly at the targets. Over a series of several years, then they develop the skills to be able to, you know, pick up a rifle on the range, carry it to the mat, shoot, and then over time, again, several years, then they get to the point where they actually get to be a big biathlete, carry the rifle on their back, and manage the whole process. But all along the way, they have to then demonstrate, you know, make it through those different gates that we've set up for them just so that we can be comfortable that they know their rules.
Yeah. And I think even to take your first shot out at the biathlon range here, you need to get a certification, essentially.
Yeah.
You need to be certified to be able to do that.
Like, yeah.
I couldn't go out there and shoot a biathlon rifle without going through a course, essentially.
Right, yeah. There's a safety course. And, you know, it's a little different from range to range. Generally, U.S. Biathlon, we have what we call a Red Book certification. It's a general safety certification. And that's really just the beginning. You know, it's just kind of giving you the really, really basic rules of safety in biathlon, and with the expectation that then you're going to be working with a coach, you're going to be kind of continuing to learn as you go with some of these more nuanced rules, you know.
Yeah.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Well, one of the things I was hoping to do out there was get a look at a biathlon rifle. And Sarah had said that they're expensive, but you got one on your lap here. I'm looking at Zach, and he's got a biathlon rifle here in his lap. And this does not look like my old 30-06 or my 12-gauge shotgun that I used to shoot at birds. This looks like a very specialized piece of equipment here. How much do these things cost? Well, what can you tell me a little bit about this rifle?
Well, so what I'm holding here, this is an Anschutz Fortner Bolt 22 caliber rifle. As it sits, it's in a fairly, we'll say, stock setup, meaning that you can buy one like what I'm holding just off, you know, from Anschutz. They're about $5,000 now, and it does look a little alien compared to a lot of our standard bolt action hunting rifles. But what's let's see how to describe this.
Well, it's got a lot of cutouts. You know, one of the things, you have to carry these on your back for 7.5 or 15 or 20 kilometers. So you don't want it to be, there's a minimum weight, but you don't want it to be too heavy, right? So there's a lot of cutouts. You know, there's a couple cutouts here on the back and on the forestock as well. And just trying to take a little bit of weight out where it's not needed, without impacting the...
If you take more weight out in places like the stock, can you then have more weight in places like the action and the barrel?
Well, you can make this rifle as heavy as you want. There's no upper limit. You can carry a super heavy rifle if you would like to do that. I don't know why you would want to. The reason there's a lower limit is for safety.
That's what I was going to say. Right.
Yeah.
It seems like as a manufacturer, if you could remove weight from places like the stock, then you could make a really beefy action or a beefier...
It can be... The weight can be distributed where you'd like to. Mm. A lot of athletes, you know, I, for example, really liked having a little more weight in the front half of the gun, because in the standing position, it balanced better for me. Mm. And so these at base weight are 3.5 kilos. That's the minimum weight for a lady or a guy. And then you'll see them go up by a little bit.
And 3.5 kilos would be just under 8 pounds, mm-hmm. something like
yeah,
that.
Yes, so you're looking about 7.5 pounds. Yep. Yeah. And then, yeah, each athlete then will ultimately, especially as you get higher up in the ranks, you'll see athletes really customize theirs to fit. Each of us, as an individual, we've got different geometry, so the length of our arms and legs and torso and all that. And so you have to take that into account as you set up a rifle, and so you'll see some really, really interesting kind of nuanced structures on the stocks. The one that I have here is made out of wood. It's a really beautiful piece, but a lot of athletes now are using, there's more aluminum and carbon fiber and other fibers that are coming into play.
In the stock.
Yeah, in the stock itself. And it really comes down to personal preference. The wood, I happen to like wood because it has a nice resonance to it. Feels different than, say, an aluminum stock, because it's got more of a kind of a direct report, and you feel a bit more of the, even with a 22 caliber, which is pretty small, you feel it a little bit differently, you sense it differently. But yeah, the older the athlete, the more they can tell you about their stock and what they like and don't like about it.
Yeah. And the other main difference too with this 22 versus like a 22 you're going to go hunting with or something is, we've got the harness on, because you are carrying it on your back. So it's got this harness coming off of the forestock and wear it like a backpack.
Like a backpack rather than over your shoulder.
Right, exactly.
That would be pretty tough.
And then you have a couple other kind of interesting things. There's a, in the rear sight setup, there's a cover, and that cover kind of flaps up and down. And basically when you're carrying the rifle on your back, it's pointed up. And so that covers down mostly to keep snow or other rain from getting into the open sight. So it's a, it's an open aperture sight, so it's just a circle, but if you get a big snowflake in there, then you can't see. And then, that's never any fun. The front sight also has a, there's a cover that, that covers both the front sight and the muzzle. And same deal, it just keeps moisture out. And then another real interesting piece of this rifle is the trigger. The trigger is set at 500 grams. That's the base weight. And if you do the conversion on that, you're looking at just over a pound of pressure for the
trigger. Which is really not much. Not much. I came from a background of no guns ever. I didn't ever shoot anything except for a biathlon rifle. I don't know much about anything except for biathlon rifles. Zach came from a hunting background, and whenever we get people that come from like a hunting background or a, you know, other kind of shooting background, and they come to shoot biathlon, they really remark on the lightness of the trigger. And you know, it has to be that the minimum weight is that 500 grams, and that's again for safety. You don't want any less than that, because then it can more easily accidentally go off. So that's one of the things you notice today when they do that safety check before each race. They're weighing their triggers to make sure that they're no lighter than that minimum
right.
weight.
Yeah, I saw the coursework or the gun technicians, I guess I'll call them, hanging a weight on the trigger to make sure that they weigh enough.
Now let's see the one other thing that I'll point out here. Actually, there's a couple. This rifle happens to have a blinder on it, so the athlete who is behind this piece of equipment shooting it can see with one eye, and then the other eye has a blinder covering, so there's just no kind
of... So you can keep both eyes open.
Both eyes stay open, so there's no visual input to one of the eyes. And then the other thing that really sets this rifle apart, I mentioned that it's a Fortner bolt, and what a Fortner bolt is, it was designed by a German named Fortner, but it's a straight pull bolt, and what that means is that you grab the bolt handle and you pull straight back towards your face, and it ejects the round, and then you just put your thumb on the back of the bolt and you push it straight forward, and it chambers the next round.
Right, rather than a typical sort of hunting bolt action where you pull it back.
Exactly, and it goes up, back, forward, down, and it's a big locking mechanism basically to manage the pressures of those rounds. But there's some really unique engineering in these bolts that allow them to straight back and forward. So you can hear it kind of cycling there. But they're really smooth, and one of the things I'll point out about this is that it's actually why we carry the rifles pointed up when we're not shooting them in operation. So as we're transporting the rifles around, setting them on a rack, the bolt will always be open. And if you point this rifle down, and I'll do that right now, the bolt will just clunk closed, and then you can't see if it's loaded or not. So for us, that's one of our safety pieces. It's a mechanical safety.
So when it's on our backs, it has the muzzle pointed up. Whenever we rack the rifles, the muzzle's pointed up. Whenever we're carrying rifles around, the muzzle's pointed up. And that's very different from like an NRA range or really any other shooting sport where it's safe to point the rifle down because
any which
that's
direction,
at the
as long
ground,
as
right? And for us, we never do that.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
and that bolt action is so light that it just drops down and drops down close.
They're well-oiled machines.
Yeah.
it's a beautiful piece of equipment. They're really cool.
And so when you're firing, the stock is fairly, you know, I was watching a lot of biathlon today, as I've said about five different times already in this show. One of the things that I noticed is that the technique for shooting a biathlon rifle is very clearly different than the technique you'd use for hunting birds with a shotgun or using a large bore hunting rifle. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think these rifles kick very little.
Very small kick, and it's interesting. You know, we try to introduce a lot of people to biathlon at Soldier Hollow. They have a pretty good program that brings a lot of different people in to try biathlon. And a lot of our clubs around the country have similar, and it's always interesting if someone has had an experience before with like, you know, an uncle handing them a 12 gauge or something and, getting a pretty big kick from that. And these things, I mean, I don't notice it at all anymore. I've, you know, shot so much. And I think if you're shooting it for the first time, you'll feel it jump just a tiny bit, but it's,
to say, tap yourself on the shoulder and that's about what it feels like. There's very little recoil and,
Is the recoil on one of these biathlon rifles similar to what you would have in a basic 22 in any other 22?
Yeah, very similar.
It's very little.
Yeah. And the noise as well is fairly suppressed. I mean, relatively.
Yeah, because it's
speaking,
subsonic, so it's... and yeah, you're not shooting really loud rounds and.
Yeah, I've spent a couple days at the range out there now, and I never, certainly never felt the need to wear ear protection or anything like that.
Yeah,
it's not, even if you're an athlete, do you ever wear ear protection, or do you?
Sarah and I both did as athletes, okay. And it comes down to a personal preference thing, and also somewhat where you train. So we trained in Lake Placid, the Olympic Training Center, and we had a covered range. Mm-hmm. And so for summertime, we would ski into this cover, and the sound would just echo all over the place. So we got in the habit of wearing them, and I actually preferred to wear them in competition because it quieted the crowds a little, and I felt like I could hear my coach better that way. In the wintertime, the snow actually absorbs a fair amount of noise, and so you don't get as much echo, but it really comes down to personal preference.
Hmm. Do you think that a lot of athletes use earplugs? Like if you watch World Cup, a lot of those athletes wear earplugs, do you think?
I think more and more are doing it. You know, and we also shoot a lot. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just the repetition of that as well. And that, you know, decibel level just over and over and over again.
Yeah.
In my mind, there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
I think your
extra...
best athletes are shooting anywhere from 10 to 25,000 rounds a year each.
Well, but
so
like you said, in addition, if you're wearing earplugs and you're in front of 35,000 people in stadium and they're all yelling at you or yelling,
yeah.
Maybe
or
at
yelling
you,
at
or,
not at you,
or maybe yelling at somebody else,
yelling for the German next door,
right? Then I can see where it might be nice just to help keep you focused. I mean, even in cross country races, sometimes you have to be a little careful. In a big race, you get 75,000 people out there and everybody's screaming at you on the first uphill to go faster.
Yeah,
and
really
if you
exciting.
Obey them,
it's really exciting.
Right. It can be tough to race the second half of the race when you realize a little too late that you've overcooked yourself at the urging of the crowd a little bit.
Well, so biathlon, there is a huge mental component to the sport of biathlon. And so I would say that was a primary reason I wore earplugs. It just helped me stay in my head and execute the game that I had planned, as opposed to following somebody else's lead.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, if you haven't guessed yet, we're talking about biathlon. I'm here with Sarah Studebaker Hall and Zach Hall, a couple of coaches and biathlon dignitaries who are in town for the week because we're right in the middle of a week of qualifying for big international races, including the World Junior Championships and the World University Games out at Kincaid Park, where there's a biathlon range. And so I was managed to drag Zach and Sarah into talk with me here on Alaska Public Radio on Outdoor Explorer, which is the show you're listening to now. At the beginning of the show, Sarah said something about this, and I'm not going to let this go. You called it a weird sport. You did? You used the word weird?
I did. I will stand by that. It was weird.
And so how does this, you know, unlike something decathlon. They're all track and field sports. You're running different distances and you're throwing stuff and jumping over things, but it's all track and field. It's all kind of the same thing. But biathlon is like two opposite things. I think in rifle shooting, I'm guessing if you're just a riflery, those guys are doing something very, very different than biathlon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would think that they're trying to have very low heart rates.
Yeah.
They're trying to stay very calm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it's about, not raising your heart rate at all. And biathlon obviously has that component.
Yeah.
Doesn't allow that.
Yeah, we're
happen.
We're very, very different sports, and you know, all the respect to the rifle marksmen, you know, those guys, Olympic shooters they're doing a completely different thing. You know,
they're trying to hit the exact
center of the target. You know, we have hits and misses. If you hit anywhere in your Oreo cookie,
good enough.
It's good enough. Doesn't matter. You know, they're trying to get, you know, tens and better. And, you know, they're also taking a lot longer. Like, we got a clock ticking. We got to get out of there. We got to, you know, hit those targets and get going. And they are going to take the whole amount of time they are allotted.
I think
they
have about a minute per shot.
Yeah,
so like that,
they're really taking that time. And so they're very, very different sports. And I think that, you know, there's sometimes it gets a little bit confused. But yeah, we're not doing the same thing. We're not training the same as they are. And I think also similar to cross-country skiing, you know, we are much more similar to cross-country skiing because that's a much bigger piece of our sport. We need that aerobic capacity the same as a cross-country skier needs. But then, you know, at least twice or four times in your race, you're going to have to completely shift your mentality into becoming a shooter. And as Zach talked about earlier, you know, you train these athletes to really think about as they're approaching the range, okay, now I'm going to shoot. Now I have to think about shooting. I got to focus on shooting. And they have to really make that shift mentally in order to be successful on the range. And if you don't, if you just come in and you're, oh, right, now I'm shooting, okay, shooting, and you're not going to hit your targets. Yeah. And you're not going to be successful. And you really have to, especially at the international level right now, and I would argue at our national level, the level is really coming up. And so you have to be a strong skier and you have to hit your targets.
Well, yeah, this is the question I was just going to ask you, and you sort of half answered it already. It's probably an almost impossible question to answer. But would you, if you are going into a really big race and you're a biathlete and you got plenty of experience, would you rather shoot well or would you rather ski well?
God.
Yes and yes.
Yeah.
I mean, naturally, of course you'd like to hit all the targets.
Yeah. I think you really need to ski well. I think that's at the base, you really have to be a strong skier. And, you know, I think that's why we also feel like biathlon goes really well with cross-country skiing. You got, you know, young athletes especially who are interested in cross-country skiing, they can do biathlon too because the training is the same.
But I got the impression today that, sort of doing a little math in my head, that if you were going to have a bad ski day or a bad shooting day, I'd rather have a bad ski day. Because the shooting, every time you miss a shot, that's like 28, 29 seconds. So you miss, if you come through the range and you have 20 total shots in five bouts in the range, and you miss, say you miss 6 or 8 targets, I mean, you're talking about losing 3 or 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. But in a bad day of skiing, you're going to ski a minute slower than you would on a good day, maybe a minute and a half slower during that period of time, maybe less than that.
You might. I mean, the other piece you have to also factor in is that every time you miss, you're also skiing further.
Skiing further too.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can, in a sprint race where you have 10 shots, you can ski a kilometer and a half further than everybody else if you miss all your shots.
Yes.
Which is
okay. So if I do if I do a biathlon race that's a 10K, I should just pretty much call it 11.5K race.
You might.
So where did this sport come from then? What were the origins of this sport?
So this is where you're asking Sarah about her comment about it being a weird sport. And it is at face value. If you see Olympic biathlon on TV, you're like, how in the world did we end up with lycra clad super fit athletes racing around loops with a rifle on their back? But if you rewind a few thousand years and you look back to hunting, then it makes a lot of sense. So our sport dates back to places like Scandinavia and Russia, where some of the original hunting was going on.
On skis.
And let's say rudimentary skis, so bigger snowshoes. Imagine a meter or two, so 3 to 6 feet of snow on the ground. And of course, here in Alaska, we have large moose, and it's a lot easier if you're on top of the snow and they're having a tough time moving through the snow. So especially at that period, you know, the best weapon you would have had was a sharp spear or maybe a bow and arrow. And so you could get up close to a large animal, you could dispatch it more safely. And then of course it's cold, so the meat would stay better. And so that's really how it kind of got its start. Now, the other interesting element to all of this, of course, is military or protection just in general. So the folks that were out hunting for their tribe were also generally protecting their tribe. And so over the you know, hundreds, thousands of years, then the sport developed very closely with the military. And so there's lots of different formats that the military still uses today that we would call biathlon. They call it military patrol, but then that dovetailed and kind of grew into what we know today, which is this amazing spectator sport in large stadiums.
Well, I think you could call Anchorage maybe in Alaska. It's maybe historically the most important biathlon state in the United States because of the program that was run out at Fort Richardson, which brought a lot of, I mean, Dick Mize was in that program a while back, and a lot of our national champions and Olympic skiers came through the program that was run by Sven Johansson out at Fort Richardson. And I think biathlon has been pretty strong, fairly strong in Alaska, I think, ever since, and it has a strong history in Alaska. Mm-hmm. It seems like the military component. Well, actually, I mean, now that I think about it, in Vermont, the other place where you guys go a lot, right near Burlington, a place called Jericho, I think.
Yeah.
That's heavily. Isn't that a
military? That's a military base. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, our U.S. biathlon and probably most countries in the world are the history of biathlon in our country is just completely linked to the military. Mm. You know, it was a military sport. The initial form of biathlon that was in the, you know, in the Olympics, really got its start through military patrol. And
do you know when that was? When was the biathlon in the first Olympics?
60?
I mean, I don't mean.
You're really putting us on the spot here.
That late, but...
I think the, you know, modern biathlon was 60 or 64, I want to say.
Okay. Well, so it
was in Squaw Valley.
Right. It was in Squaw Valley in 60.
Yeah.
So it had. So I thought that maybe it had been 50 years prior to that.
Yeah, so it had
wasn't.
Been in for a couple of years.
An exhibition.
In the 20s right. or 30s. Okay. You can't see me, but I'm really trying to dig into my brain to find. But yeah, it was as an exhibition sport way, way back, you know, early Winter Olympic history. But it was in a much different form at that point, you know, and it was only one competition. And I think, you know, it was much more similar to our individual. Now we're getting a time penalty for misses.
And if I remember correctly, and you can, I don't know too much about it, but I've talked to Dick Mize a little bit about it. And I think they were, in the 1960 Olympics, they were using 30-06 rifles,
they were,
I think.
Yeah.
And they were
bore.
Shooting, I think, at targets at various distances, up to... 250 meters or something? Is that possible?
Yeah, correct. So it would have been, various distances and different size targets even.
Yeah.
There were glass targets
were glass
for a while.
Targets, yeah.
And you referenced the caliber, so a 30-06, and then in Scandinavia, it was the 6.5 by 55 Swede, which now we have the 6.5 Creedmoor, which is a very popular round that's come online in the last few years, but it's a... You know, that's what they've hunted moose with for ages.
And course, is that also a standard military?
Exactly.
Military
round. Yeah. And that's how it started. And you know, as biathlon grew and they started to try to make it more spectator and television friendly, they started to create these different formats of events. So we still have an individual, which is, where. It's the longest event that we have. It's 20 kilometers for men, 15 kilometers for women. And instead of the penalty loop that we've been talking about, this 150 meters, every miss that you get a 1 minute penalty added to your time. So it's really important to shoot well in that race because there's a huge penalty for misses. It's also not the most interesting from a spectator standpoint because you have no idea what's going on. You know, someone could look like they're skiing really fast, but they've, you know, missed five targets. They're way back in the results. So it's a great event. It's a really important event for our history, and there's, you know, it's a really tough event. You know, it's the longest one that
it's
we
the
have.
Marathon
and,
of biathlon.
Yeah, exactly.
If you will.
So it's important that we continue to have that. But it's you know, one of the least spectator friendly events. So creating, especially like the pursuit and the mass start races where spectators can easily see what's going on, was really important to the popularity of biathlon, as well as creating a standardization of the range and the distance and the targets and creating electronic targets so that spectators and athletes can see right away when they've hit and missed, has really brought the sport to where it is.
Yeah, I think the penalty loop was a big, I mean, for me out there today, I thought seeing the penalty loop, that added something to the race. I thought as a spectator.
Yeah, for because sure.
Because you can see what's going on.
Yeah.
You can see who missed. I mean, even if I didn't look down the range and see who missed their targets, if I see somebody going around and around and around and around,
like,
and I think, well, they're not going to be too happy.
Well, it's interesting standing watching the penalty loop because you see a lot of different faces kind of flash across the, as the athletes come by you.
Yeah.
Well, so you guys are both involved in the development and of this sport, both as an administrator and as a coach. What would you say to kids? You know, if you got somebody who's listening to this, whether an adult or a kid listening to this show, it's I've never heard of biathlon, but I like to cross country ski and I like shooting guns. I want to do this sport. How do you go about doing that? Or like, what would you say to a 12-year-old who kind of likes cross-country skiing, but thinks that biathlon would double the fun? I mean, how do they...
It's an awesome sport, and it's here in Anchorage, it's not that hard to get involved with. There are a couple different clubs here in Anchorage at Kincaid Park, and so you just get in touch with one of the coaches, and they'll plug you in. I think they meet 2 to 3 times per week, so there's lots of shooting opportunity year-round. Mm-hmm. And then my understanding is there's a small club getting going in Palmer as well.
Yeah, so there's up here they have the Alaska Biathlon Association, which kind of helps bring all the different clubs around the state together. And so, you know, you can reach out to those guys and help. They'll help you find a club and help you get contact as well. You can also go to US Biathlon's website, and we have a list of clubs around the country.
What has interested you guys about the sport? I mean, I first met you when you were in high school, and I was racing, ski racing, right?
Yeah, we got to start together once.
That's right. I remember it well. Yeah, but you both ended up ultimately in your professional careers as biathletes instead of cross country skiers. What do you think? How did you end up? I mean, what do you make of all that looking back? Neither of you were cross-country skiers as professionals, only as biathletes. I mean, it was something that you described as coming out of college. There was sort of an ulterior motive. It was a practical thing to get into.
Yeah, but, well, you know, for me, I wanted to keep ski racing, and there wasn't much opportunity in cross-country at the time. There were a couple clubs, but as I looked at the opportunity with biathlon, they were starting this development program. And there was a chance to move directly into a pipeline where I could live at an Olympic training center. There was an opportunity for healthcare and coaching and et cetera. And it just seemed like one heck of an adventure. And it turned out to be exactly that.
Right, because you were racing World Cups
It took me a couple years. And then I ended up in Europe and raced quite a few World Cups, got close to making an Olympic team. And, you know, my background is more in the academic world of psychology and education. And I loved cross-country ski racing. But when I found biathlon, it just even turned on more light bulbs. And it's just a fascinating, you know, personally as an athlete, going through that process, there's so much to learn and it's super engaging and just interesting. It was exciting for me. And then transitioning out of being an athlete now and now being a coach, I find it to be a lot of fun to expose young kids to it. And as I like to say, it's biathlon happens to be the paradigm that we use to teach life lessons. It's a great sport for doing that, both on the ski side and the shooting side. And so it continues to captivate my imagination because it's just a neat way to meet a lot of great people.
It's really opened a lot of doors for both of us. We've had the opportunity to be athletes at a really high level, to coach, to put on events. Zach is an international referee. I just received my technical delegate's license, so we both have the opportunity to officiate at different events around the country and around the world. And it's just it's a very, very weird sport at its face value. But there's so many things that can go wrong with biathlon in a biathlon race. But when they all go right, it is just amazing, and it's it's really the best feeling. I think. There's watching a biathlon race or participating in one, or for me or Zach, officiating or coaching, you can see when it's clicking for athletes. And it's just the coolest thing to see that happen and to see like the training and the mentality and just like the luck of the day come together and make it happen for an athlete. It's just such an exciting sport. And so, I would encourage anyone who's wants to try it to get involved, or if you think you might want to coach or officiate or something, like we have opportunities for people at all ages and at any level that they want to be involved at. And I think it's just a really cool opportunity.
Yeah. So it sounds like the U.S. Biathlon Association will make it easy for
will help you out. You want to be involved, get in touch.
Yeah. Well, I really enjoyed my time out there the last couple of days in the race. It was a fun couple of days for me for sure. And I want to thank both of you for agreeing to meet me this afternoon and talking to me, Sarah Studebaker Hall and Zach Hall. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me here.
It's been great.
My guests today have been Sarah Studebaker Hall and Zach Hall, and we've been talking about the joys and pleasures of biathlon. I'm your host today on Outdoor Explorer. I would also like to thank our producer, Eric Bork. Thank you for joining me here on Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media, and I'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.